Hey, y'all, before we get started, this is a trigger warning. Today's conversation includes a lot of discussion around trauma and childhood sexual abuse. With that being said, today's guest is Sebastian Scales, who was molested by his friend's dad as a kid, and now he does stand-up comedy about it. He has a podcast called What Happened to You, where he and others talk and laugh about their trauma in an effort to remove the stigma around these types of conversations. He also founded a nonprofit called What Happened to You Foundation, dedicated to providing trauma victims with the resources that they need. I just hit you with a lot of information, didn't I? You're like, what? Say what? Heather, what are y'all talking about? Listen, y'all, I ran across Sebastian over on the TikTok and was super impressed by the way that he was approaching some really taboo topics and helping others feel comfortable discussing them through his talent and his gift of comedy. As Sebastian says in today's episode, I don't think people understand the impact you can have on others by being vulnerable. You ready, y'all? Today's conversation, it's a little unconventional.
I've always felt immense fear.
I was born with cerebral palsy.
I have always felt small.
I was told not to take risks.
I may be blind, but I teach people how to see.
And I'm proud to be an individual.
This podcast is for you, the unconventional leader.
Maybe you are the one that everyone discounted.
Maybe you struggle with fear and self-doubt.
We are here to empower the next generation of self-starters to step up.
Use their voice
and make an impact in this world.
What's up, y'all? Welcome to today's episode. I have Sebastian Scales with me. I've been kind of creeping a little bit online. I'm not even going to lie to you. I have been. And I'm proud of it. I'm excited about it because this is an awesome human that you guys need to know who's putting out meaningful content, but also in a very unconventional way. And I know you guys are going to just fall in love with him like I have over the past few months listening to his story and his approach to some kind of taboo topics. Sebastian, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, what an intro, Heather. Thank you so much for having me and for, checking out my stuff. Not creepy at all, by the way. Happy that you're interested in it. And I'm excited to be here.
I own my creepiness. Like, I own it. I own it. You had me on your about page where you quoted Dr. Wayne Dyer, the late great. I love that man. Quote on your about page is, it is impossible for you to be angry and laugh at the same time. Anger and laughter are mutually exclusive, and you have the power to choose either. What a powerful statement. And for one for you to choose to intentionally put on your about page. What, when you hear that statement, what does that mean to you personally?
Yeah, well, it's, so for people that don't know, I was molested by my best friend's dad when I was 8 years old, and it went on for 2 years. And I eventually told my parents about it. And it's always funny sort of starting this and just being like, well, here we go.
And then you're like laughing about it as you do it.
Yes, exactly. And people are like pretty confused about it. But I now do stand-up comedy about it. You know, I didn't start until I was 22. And so for about 12 years, I sort of was just sitting with this experience that I had and seeing how the world perceived it, even though it's not a very talked about topic, when it is talked about, it's so negative. People are not comfortable speaking about it. And that's part of why it's so hard for victims to come forward, is because they feel bad about making everybody feel bad. I started doing stand-up when I was 22 in New York. And the first set that I ever did actually was about my molestation experience.
Your first set?
Yeah, which was bananas, because doing stand-up for the first time, which you'll find out in a week or two here, which is, I'm so excited for you, by the way. The first time that you do it, it's this insane feeling of like all of the fears that you had about public speaking and being judged and failing and bombing, all of those things combined with like letting out this, it wasn't a secret at this point, but I hadn't really talked about it since I was 10. So it was this crazy feeling of it was like so cathartic, and like, It fortunately went pretty well, because I said it was my first time and everybody was like, yeah, you know, like they're supportive if you say that it's your first time. I just remember, I mean, it was really, truly, I think the craziest feeling I've ever had. And it was just nuts. Like how I just remember leaving the club that night and being like, wow, this, I want to do this forever. Like this, this is the most amazing thing. And so for a year after that, I was just like I tried to do it every night just because I was so addicted to the feeling. What ended up happening was like, people would come up to me after shows and just tell me like the craziest things that had happened to them. I remember one guy came up to me. His name's Alex Cunningham. He was actually the second guest on the podcast. And he came up to me after and told me that both of his parents killed themselves when he was 8 and then 12. And I was just like, and he told me that and he was like, wow, I saw you laughing about getting molested. And I just felt like I could share this with you. And I was like, oh my God, like this is, it's this super untapped area of this really dark topic that is sort of, it's like opening Pandora's box when you start joking about it, because it is impossible to be angry and laugh at the same time. And after having experienced many years of holding in this experience and the anger and worry and anxiety, fear associated with it, now having experienced laughing about it, it's like I'll choose laughter every time. I mean, it just makes you feel so much better about it. So I think that stand-up is really what started, it's what allowed me to start healing from my experience. Ever since I started doing stand-up about it, I can't stop talking about it because it feels good now. It's become something that I was afraid to talk about, and or it was something that I was afraid to talk about, and now I can't stop talking about it. So it's been a wild experience for sure.
Do you feel like it's taken away this anger, kind of like Dr. Dyer alluded to?
Absolutely, yeah. And so I actually saw the guy who molested me over Christmas. I was home for the holidays. So long story short, we had to go to trial when I was 10, and the guy did not get convicted, which is pretty standard for child molestation cases because there's rarely any evidence. Most of the time, it's just the guy's word against the kid's word, and that's not enough to convict somebody in our judicial system. My parents asked me, like, do you want to move away? Like, because we don't, he's just going to be around, you know? And I didn't want to leave because all of my friends were there. I loved where I grew up. And so we stayed, and I would just to see him around, you know? And we had a restraining order against him, but one of the conditions on the restraining order was that he was allowed to go to his son's soccer games. His son and I were on the same high school soccer team. So for every high school soccer game, the guy who molested me was in the stands, which was kind of crazy. I would just always see him around, and whenever I would see him, I would get so, like, it felt like it was kind of fight or flighty, you know, like my heart rate would go up and I would just be kind of scared. Ever since I started doing stand-up, I hadn't seen him since I started. And this time over Christmas, I was home and I just saw him in Safeway. And for the first time, I didn't feel any negative emotion towards him at all. Yeah, it felt like completely neutral. Like I felt like it was, I mean, I saw him and recognized him and of course knew who he was and everything, but I didn't feel that rush. I didn't feel that blood. I wasn't afraid of him anymore. I wasn't angry towards him. And to be honest, I felt a little bit of compassion towards him. You know, I wasn't psyched to see him, of course, but I did feel like an empathetic aspect of the like interaction that was like, you know, part of what's interesting about child molestation is that it's generally learned behavior. Most of the people that are molesters had it happen to them. And because I know that now, part of me was empathizing with him because it probably happened to him. It doesn't make it okay, of course. But I think anytime you can let go of anger that you're holding onto with regards to a past experience or any experience, it can really set you free from it and allow your current state of being to be just rid of those feelings. And it was just an extremely freeing feeling. And I do think that there's a tremendous amount of benefit to forgiving people or just not holding on to any of those feelings that don't really serve you.
Okay. So one thing, I know we've known each other 15 whole minutes now, but one thing you've not learned about Heather Parody is that before I started getting interested in media and the kind of entertainment approach to personal development and all of that, I was a therapist. Okay. And mm-hmm. Those are two different worlds. And I feel like a lot of people kind of take the backwards approach where they're, you know, kind of more understanding of, you know, putting everything out there and they go into the psychology of things and they really understand that, you know, people need to earn the right to hear your story. And there's so much depth there and, you know, building trust and rapport and then, you know, letting everything go. And it was just a freaking whirlwind when I left that world and I started taking acting classes and getting interested in media. And they're like, oh no, like tell us everything and like dig in deep to that one trauma you had, and it's rich and it's interesting and you can make art and work from that. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? It was this crazy backwards approach to what I understood and was trained to how you handle trauma and how you handle things. And, you know, there's no right or wrong way. Everything is so situational. But what's so, you know, interesting to me about you is, you know, you're a young man who's gone through some crazy crap. And this is how you have found your healing. And this is how you're, you know, helping other people is a very unconventional approach to dealing with trauma. For those who are like, what the hell are you talking about, Sebastian? You're making jokes about being molested and you're, you know, bringing kind of entertaining content to TikTok and your podcast and stuff and talking about really deep things. Can you kind of explain what that looks like practically and maybe your journey deciding that that's how you were going to deal with this?
I think it really came down to the reaction that people were having to the stand-up that I was doing, as well as how it made me feel. You know, like I said, I experienced what the typical response was to these kind of things. And normally when you tell people that you got molested, they're like, oh my God, I am so sorry. Like, I don't see how things could be any worse for you, basically. And people aren't malicious when they react like that. Of course, that's the natural response, but it does remind you of how the world views what happened to you. And the whole goal of my podcast and doing stand-up about it is to remove the stigma around these conversations using humor as a foundation. If the whole world viewed these topics as, if it wasn't hard to speak up about it, if people didn't feel so bad for you, and it was almost just, if it was a more accepted conversation, it would be so much easier for people to speak up. So that's sort of the main goal of these things. But in addition to how it made me feel, when people would come up to me and tell me like, hey, I got molested too, you know, and this would just be a stranger in the audience after a show. And they would be like, hey, I got molested too. You know, and people were starting to message me being like, hey, I've never told anybody about this. And so it just became this thing that just sort of happened naturally, where there were too many people telling me too many things for me to not turn it into a podcast. And so the podcast just sort of happened. And now, you know, we're 25 episodes in and we've covered all sorts of different topics from, you know, child molestation to cancer to, you know, rape. It's a really interesting group of people who are all down to laugh about their trauma, because we all know how it feels when you're not laughing about it. And it feels a lot better to laugh about what's happened to you. Yeah, I think it's just one of those things. It's like following the feeling, you know, it's interesting. I know how it felt before and I know how it feels now, and I don't plan on going. And it's not that, you know, these conversations are not on the podcast. We're not just laughing the whole time, of course. But laughter serves as the foundation on which the conversations can occur. We're able to tackle these things from a more lighthearted point of view. And I think that that allows the conversation to flow more easily rather than being this thing that's like so dark and heavy. You know, it's really just sort of removing the pressure around speaking about these things. And then, go ahead.
we're both polite, can't you tell? You know, when you're coming up with material, you pull from what you know. And I know that there are so many other things that define you and about who you are as a man and things you've experienced. Your first set, you decided to lean into that. How come?
It's a good question. I saw a set from obviously the now controversial Louis C.K. He did a set on SNL where he made a joke about child molestation, and it was hilarious. And I was watching it with my family at the time. This was back in high school. I remember my mom was like, oh, this is not okay. But me and my dad were both laughing about it. And that was the first time I'd ever seen anybody really joke about it.
And they knew about, because y'all had gone through a trial and all that at that point.
That's right. Yeah. So that happened when I was 10. This is a couple of years later in high school. But I saw him do that, and it wasn't about him getting molested. It was just about the topic of child molestation. But it still had the same effect on me that was like, I'm laughing about this thing that has been so, I've been so scared to talk about for so long. So, and you know, it wasn't like I saw that and then I was like, you know, I'm going to do stand up immediately. I had to stew on it for, you know, a number of years and sort of get the confidence to actually try it out. But, I I think it just sort of, it almost felt like it was just something that I needed to have. Like, I knew that I wanted to talk about it, but I just didn't know how. When I was in therapy, I went to therapy for a little bit after we went to court, and it was like, I just didn't feel right. You know, I just had to testify in front of all these adults and the guy who molested me for like many hours detailing all of these experiences. And the last thing I wanted to do was keep talking about it. So it felt like enough time had passed, and I've always enjoyed public speaking and, you know, making jokes and things like that. And it just seemed like it hadn't really been done before. So I don't know exactly what it was that caused me to do it, but I'm so happy that it happened.
What did your parents think when you're like, hey, side note, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian. And side note, I'm going to joke about the big trauma thing that happened when I was a kid.
They were super supportive.
Really?
In part because I had conversations with them before I did that first set, because I was trying to go back into my mind and figure out what actually happened and what can I make funny about this. And so we had a lot of conversations about it, which, again, we hadn't really talked about it at all since the trial. And so it caused them to also start processing this stuff. And I think that it allowed all of us to kind of heal together, because we were starting to have these conversations that would be like, I would just call my parents up and start talking about getting molested, which is like, you know, normally a super traumatic thing for a parent to have to talk to their kid about. And, you know, it definitely was probably at first, but over time, you know, they got to the point where they're laughing about it too now. And I think that that's what's so interesting about laughter, is that it has this amazing ability to just make you feel okay, to remove the fear. And especially, like, you know, when I first started doing stand-up about it, I wasn't okay yet. You know, I hadn't healed, and I'm still healing. You know, it's an ongoing journey. But especially when I first started out, I didn't quite know, in addition to being bad at stand-up initially, you know, you don't quite know how to introduce the information, and the audience can feel how the person on stage feels about what they're saying. And if you're not quite comfortable yet, the audience is going to pull back. And that happened to me a lot. Like I said, I bombed for a long, long time with this content. But over time, you get more comfortable talking about it. And that happened between me and my parents too. I mean, we cried a lot, you know, over the phone. I remember talking, especially initially. And it just, those are emotions and feelings that we needed to have. You know, it was this thing that none of that went away. It's just stored up in your body. And once you start sort of actually acknowledging it and accepting it and letting it go, then you can really get to another place that's like, there's no fear there. And, you know, now my parents and I talk about it all the time. They listen to all the podcast episodes and, you know, give feedback and things like that. So I'm super grateful for them. I'm very fortunate to have parents that supported me. But I did have a corporate job at the time. And I started doing stand-up a week before that corporate job. And I called my parents like literally after the first day and was like, I have to get out of here. Like, I found what I want to do. I don't want to do this corporate job anymore. So they were supportive, but they were also like, you need to have money. You're paying right now to do stand-up. For those that don't know, it's actually quite expensive to do stand-up at the beginning, because you have to pay to do it. But you know, it's they were very supportive throughout my life, and it's been, you know, I'm very thankful for them, for sure.
They seem pretty cool.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things I've, and you know, this is really a question for them, but you know, as you start having kids and all that, I don't think people realize how common, you know, molestation is, and how, you know, you can try to like parent as best as you can. This crap kind of happens. And I'm sure with all the amount of people that you've talked to, sometimes you feel like you're alone and you're like this outlier, but it could happen to anybody at any time. And no matter how much you protect your kids, like, I don't want to put fear in anybody by any means, but also normalize that this is shit that happens in this world. Right? No matter what kind of environment you grow up in.
Absolutely. Part of why it's such it's an epidemic, really. Statistically, 1 in 5 kids get molested. The reason those numbers are so high, in part, is because people are so afraid to talk about it. They don't want to acknowledge that because it makes you feel bad. You know, it's a gross thing to think about. And that's part of why stand-up is so important. Doing stand-up about it is so important because you can show people that you don't have to feel so bad about these topics. You can laugh about them. But if we don't acknowledge the problem, similar to acknowledging the feelings that we were talking about, you know, if you don't acknowledge that this stuff happens, you're not going to be able to prevent it from happening. And right now, you know, for example, we need to be educating, and this is one of the things that we're trying to do with the nonprofit that I founded, is education reform about how these topics are approached in school. You know, a lot of people don't want to introduce their kids to molestation or like the dangers of molestation because they think that it'll introduce the concept of like sexual things too early. Which I understand that, but it's, well, the risk massively outweighs the reward. In terms of what you're preventing versus what you're potentially preventing by telling, and you can explain this to kids without causing them to, you know, without like harming their development. It really does come down to a lack of education. People don't understand how big of a problem this is. And if we can change the way these topics are approached, we can really start educating the general public, because I mean, it's a global issue and it's been going on for who knows how long. But if we keep it hush hush, you know, and continue to make things so uncomfortable talking around this topic, it's just going to continue to be a big problem. Yeah, it's definitely just about spreading awareness and making people understand that, you know, there's a misconception with child molestation that it's like stranger danger, right? Like that's like such an iconic phrase and everybody knew stranger danger, but nobody knows that the majority of people who molest kids are like well-known, well-respected people in society. It's generally family members or close friends, friends' parents, other kids. You know, it's people think that it's just they're super gross looking and like they're weird and stuff. But most of the time, they're like people that you know and oftentimes care about. And that's part of why it is such a problem, is because, for example, somebody who came on my podcast just in the last episode, she was raped by her dad for 10 years, starting at age 3. And she eventually, you know, he was caught and put in jail. And she still has family members who say that they don't believe her because that's their uncle, for example. And people don't want to come to terms with the fact that this stuff happens, especially when it's somebody that you care about. Yeah, it's an interesting dilemma to be in, but it's going to continue happening if we don't do something about it. So that's another part of the goal of the foundation and the podcast and everything like that.
How has this shifted and shaped your view of humanity, hearing all of this?
Well, there's a lot of things that are not great about humanity, but of course, the vast majority of people are not child molesters, you know, and I think the majority of people would condemn that behavior. And I'm optimistic about it because I know the effect that comedy and this podcast and just being open and vulnerable about your experiences, I know the effect that has on people. You know, I've gotten a really an insane number of people who have reached out telling me about what's happened to them and how they've never told anybody about it before, how they feel like they can speak up just because I'm speaking up. And then as a result, you know, when people come on the podcast, people who listen to the podcast reach out to them and they say the same thing happened to me. And, you know, it really is going to be this sort of infectious speaking out that's going to happen globally. And the sooner we do that, the more of a impact we can have in mitigating the severity of these of child molestation. So it's not that I distrust humanity, you know, and you don't want parents to be like afraid of other parents, you know, but you should just be aware. And I don't think that it's too far-fetched to be constantly checking in with your kids and being like, is there any adult that made you feel weird for any reason, uncomfortable, anything like that? Because kids leave, not all kids, but oftentimes they'll leave little breadcrumb trails. You know, I didn't know what molestation was while I was getting molested. And that's just, again, a lack of education. I knew what like a good touch and a bad touch was, but I didn't know to look out for parents that might be touching kids. So I sort of didn't know how to articulate what was going on with me. And it took my mom literally asking me, you know, I eventually was just exhibiting all of these signs and I got in a fight with my friend and I basically said I didn't want to go to his house anymore. And after a while, she sort of pulled it out of me. And I'm so thankful that she did. But kids do leave these little breadcrumb trails. And if we can be aware of what to look out for, that will help a lot for sure. Yeah, I think that it's I'm optimistic despite the severity of the situation. I'm optimistic that we can, you know, all that means is there's a massive opportunity to help people. And that's why I'm so thankful for technology these days and being able to, you know, go on TikTok and reach a crazy amount of people overnight. And, you know, it's an exciting time for sure.
For sure. And, you know, I want to acknowledge, you know, the energy that you're putting out in the world. And I'm so curious about it because, like, from a creative standpoint, like stepping out of kind of the activist, you know, position and all that into like a creative and figuring out different angles and ways to create content and humor around such a heavy topic. Like, dude, I just get pissed. And, you know, there's a lot of my own trauma mixed in that. And, you know, family and friends and hearing people like you and share their stories where I just get pissed. And I'm like, I just want to like punch somebody in the face and I get mad. And like, I respect, but I'm so curious about like your own creative process when you can kind of hold space for so many people to share such heavy things and then come out of that, not only as an activist, but also too as a creative and thinking through like, how do I create content around such heavy things and make it accessible? What's your process like that? And your energy is so free and light and fun and life-giving. I don't know how you hold space and do that. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you so much. I definitely think that a big part of it and something that I've been coming to terms with over the past couple of years doing stand-up is acknowledging truth. Like, what actually happened, you know, what was really going on in my head while I was going through these experiences? How do I really feel about it now? I think when I first started doing stand-up, I felt the need to exaggerate and fabricate and try to entertain people rather than using it as an opportunity to like really get into the depths of myself and how I actually felt at the time. And as a result of that, the best comedy that I've come up with is just what happened. You know, that Heelys bit, for example, like my parents really did buy me Heelys after I told them that I got molested. And I really did think that it was worth it. Like that was, I mean, legitimately, that's what was going on in my head. I mean, I wasn't like, you know, I would get molested again to get another pair of Heelys. But in my head, I was like, these are pretty cool. And it's such a freeing thing when you don't feel the need to change who you are or the experiences that you've had in order to entertain people or please people. And I think that it's, part of it is when you accept yourself and the experiences that you've had, it allows you to be non-judgmental of what other people have been through. And I think that's part of why people gravitate towards the podcast and why so many people want to come on it and share their stories is because they know that I'm not going to think they're weird. I'm not going to think that it's crazy what they're saying or that, you know, literally whatever it is that they've gone through, there's no judgment. And I think that creating a space where people can share these things in a way that they know that it's not going to, nobody's going to be mad at them for it. Nobody's going to be sad for them. You know, I think creating that space is, I don't know. I find it very cathartic to be able to talk with people about the things that they've experienced. And it's not that I'm numb to the trauma, you know, I do hear a lot of crazy things that people have gone through on this podcast, but the people that come on, generally, when you're able to laugh about things, you're at a point where you can talk about them pretty openly. And you're definitely, humor's not for everybody, you know, but it can be an amazing tool for healing. And in my experience, the people that I talk to who are joking about these things can present it in a way that makes me feel okay. And the people that are listening and watching the podcast feel okay to listen to. Similar to what I was saying earlier about how if you're on stage and you're not comfortable with what you're saying, it makes the audience feel uncomfortable. But if the audience knows you're okay, then they're okay to laugh. And that's what I try to do with the people that come on the podcast is get people who are at that point. And people get there in all sorts of different ways. And some people never make jokes about that and what they've been through. And that's okay, too. But the people that like using humor really like it. And it can just be so powerful. I think that because people haven't really been joking about this stuff for so long, it's just, again, this untapped resource. I think so many people can benefit from. I know so many people can benefit from. Yeah, I guess that's kind of an insight into my creative process. It's just trying to be as truthful as possible.
Do you get afraid about, because I think I've been really asking myself what is my own truth and trying to figure out how to express it a little bit more, but I'm so afraid of offending people. Did you worry about that at all?
Of course. I worried the most about offending other victims. I didn't want to discredit anybody else who had been through something. And that was sort of where I made the shift from, and I still do, you know, YouTube videos and I talk about other things in the podcast of general, you know, molestation in the media. I think that it's important to be commenting on these topics. But when it comes to making jokes and doing stand-up, it's when you're talking about yourself, nobody can say that you didn't feel that way. Nobody can say that you didn't think that at the time. And so there's a lot of freedom in that. That you can just trust yourself to be authentic and you don't really have to worry. Anybody who is going to be offended by who you really are is not somebody that you want to be around anyway. So you don't have to worry about offending people in that regard because it's okay. That's probably not somebody that you want around you anyway. And as a result of being authentic, the people that come into your life who you may have never met otherwise are meeting who you really are, and the relationship that you have with them is way better than you could have imagined with people that you were trying to please or felt like you couldn't be yourself around. So I wouldn't worry about it too much, but I completely get why you feel that way. Because I've, you know, again, these are all ongoing things. It's just stuff that I'm working on. I oftentimes find myself pleasing people and not being authentic. And I think it's just being aware of that and not getting down on yourself if you find yourself falling back into old patterns, just acknowledging it and recognizing that that's an opportunity to just be more of yourself, you know? Yeah, don't worry about offending people. That's the whole point of comedy anyway. It's like, or not the whole point of comedy, but a big part of it is talking about things that will inevitably offend people. You know, I know people that have been through things that are totally not okay with humor. And again, that's okay. It's not for them. But if I didn't do comedy because I was worried about that, then there are so many people who I wouldn't have been able to help as a result. Amen. So,
yeah, that's a huge reason why I signed up for it is I knew that I was limiting myself in my content, my message, because I was so afraid of hurting people. And I'm like, stand up is a good way to get over that.
For sure. Yes. And the people that you will meet doing stand up and, you know, who go to stand up shows are looking for that kind of stuff. You know, they want to see who you really are. What are your real thoughts? What are your unaltered thoughts when you're not worried about offending people? No worries.
Yeah. Just too. I always grew up too nice. That's a problem. It's a problem.
I'm right there with you. Yes.
It's a curse. We have a segment in the show called Unsung Hero. A lot of times when we think about making an impact in this world, we think about influencers or millionaires or famous people, but more often than not, those who have made a really big impact in our lives is usually an unsung hero. Someone who doesn't have a huge Instagram following, isn't famous. No one would really know their name. I'm sure there are many, but if you were to look back over your life, if there's one person or situation that's really sticking out in your mind right now who said or did something that truly made an impact on you, who would you say your unsung hero is?
Wow.
Drop that one on you.
What a great question. I would honestly say that it's my friend whose dad molested me because he and I still had a friendship as a result of everything that had happened. And again, you know, when this was going on, he was my best friend. And part of why it took me 2 years to speak up was because I thought that I would lose him as my friend. You know, I don't know if it was happening to him too. I don't know if he ever saw what was happening to me, but the fact that we played on the same soccer team and he was always nice to me, like the fact that he wasn't just like a dick to me, you know, also one says that he probably knew what was going on. Just the fact that he didn't ruin our relationship or feel the need to make me feel bad for speaking up, that allowed me to heal so much more. And it made my whole life so much easier. And it's why I leave everything anonymous now in the podcast. And I don't name the guy who molested me or anything, was because I don't want his friend, my friend to experience any sort of ramifications as a result of that. But I don't know if he had forgiven me or maybe he knew what was going on. And so he just empathized with me. Whatever the reason was, he allowed me to not feel guilty about speaking up. And that freedom from guilt make continuing to speak up so much easier. And I don't know if he's seen my stand-up or the podcast or anything like that. I'm not sure, but I am just so grateful that he just like didn't hold it against me.
Beautiful. I have one final question for you, but first I want to acknowledge you. I love the content you're putting out. I love your show. I know many of you guys are listening are like, well, tell me more. I want to hear Sebastian's story. Well, go to the show notes and we'll link up his podcast where you're very vulnerable and real and share all the details. So that's what that is there for. But your podcast, share with people what's the name of it. And also, too, what are you most excited about that you would like people to connect with?
The podcast is called What Happened to You with Sebastian Scales. You can find me. I'm at Sebastian Scales on everything. So if you whatever app you use, you can find me there. I'd say I'm most excited about being able to sort of take the exposure that I have to the next level. The content that I've been putting out has had a really profound impact on the people that are listening and watching, and also myself doing it. And it really now is just a matter of getting it in front of as many people as possible. Because again, when you look at the numbers, there are so many people that are affected by this. And that 1 in 5 statistic was just of reported cases. Most people never report. There are so many people that could benefit from it. And so I'm excited to continue to grow podcasts, grow the following, grow. I'm just excited to grow and to continue to try to help as many people as possible and to spread awareness about this topic and hopefully make people not be afraid to speak up anymore and show people that you can get to a point where you're not only not afraid, but you're actually quite excited and enthusiastic about speaking up. Because I don't think people understand the impact that you have on others by being vulnerable, and not just about molestation, whatever you've gone through. Everybody's got shit, you know? Everybody's got something. And if you are willing to acknowledge what's happened to you and share that with the world, you never know who will benefit from that as a result. And it's healing for yourself. And also when you find out that you're helping people, it's like this double whammy of, or not whammy, but it emphasizes it. And it's an amazing feeling. So I would encourage anybody who's been through something similar to speak up. And I'm just very excited to continue to grow.
Right on. Very last question. I can picture you in my mind. I'm not sure where you were at, but your very first stand-up routine where you made the brave decision to laugh and make jokes about something that so many people would probably even struggle admitting to a close friend. This was several years ago. If you were to go and sit with that young man before he were to publicly, you know, display his gift of comedy in such, you know, an unconventional way. If you were to go and sit with that young man and tell him one thing that you've learned through these interviews, through the content, through his years of stand-up, what would you tell him?
Just another wonderful question. I would say to trust yourself and to trust your feelings and to follow the feelings that make you feel good. If there's something that you're enthusiastic about, there's a reason for that. And there's a lot of potential that I think goes untapped by people not being willing to acknowledge their feelings. And I felt like the feelings that I was having when I was about to do stand up for the first time were so, I was so scared, just terrified, petrified. And if I had, you know, just given into that and not, and this is sort of counterintuitive now because I'm saying listen to your feelings, but I had these terrible feelings. So I think be willing to acknowledge your feelings and then push through. You know, if the reason you're not doing a thing is because of fear, you're missing out on something that might completely change the trajectory of your life for the better. So, and I know that for me, that was taking this sort of safe corporate job compared to pursuing something like stand-up. And having done the latter, you know, I would say that I completely am happy with that decision. Yeah, I think just following your feelings, not feeling like you can't be yourself.
What y'all think about that, my friends? Isn't Sebastian cool? Make sure you connect with him over at YHT tyfoundation.org that is linked in the show notes. And I want to hear from you. What did you think about today's conversation? What other unconventional topics would you like us to address? Make sure you find me over on the Instagram. It is at Heather Parody, P-A-R-A-D-Y. Hit me up. Send me a DM. Slide into that DM. Love you. In your corner. See you soon.